Hey, kia ora guys. Before we get into today's podcast, I want to do a couple of shout-outs, if I may. One, I would like to shout-out to the people, and Darius Jahangir Sensei and his lovely wife, Mona, who I purchased this beautiful custom-made gi, the Satori gi. If you're up there in Aurora, or if you have an opportunity to, I absolutely love the gi. Custom-made, man. There's nothing quite like it. So if you have a chance, try the gi. I've got that new gi glow on at the moment. So if you get a chance, please do check out Satori Gi. And big thanks to also my bro, Steve Armshihan, who took time to send it to me and be the kind of intermediary. I think that's what they call it. So thank you, bro. And thank you, Darius Sensei, for your beautiful craftsmanship. Looking forward to hopefully you coming down or me coming up to Canada again soon. Also, I wanted to do a quick shout out to Steve Riley Sensei, who is a prominent senior Gojiru practitioner here in New Zealand. And he and I caught up with each other, I guess last week. I was in his neck of the woods and we stopped and we had this really great conversation. And I want to just say that he inspired this podcast theme today. And so with that said, I will shut up and we'll roll the credits. SSN Industry. Kia ora, I'm Tuari Dawson, and you're listening to the Invisible Sensei podcast. I always wanted to be a singer, and I am a singer, I guess. I sing in lots of bands. No, don't ask what albums I've put out or anything like that. You've probably never heard me sing, but I sing and I enjoy it. And I remember really well the person who encouraged me to sing in front of people that first time. And his name was Dennis Mariu. And he's put me in mind of the importance of sensei and the importance of understanding that not all sensei that we will have in life do martial arts. But obviously, many do. So when I was a kid lacking confidence, I was lucky enough to meet Dennis, who was a family friend, and he encouraged me to sing. I think I might have been messing around. I'd never sung really in front of people. I did a couple of little school things when I was a kid, and I always loved singing, but I'd never thought about doing it to any great degree. It never seemed like something that was possible for me. Anyway, he put me in his band and I sang in front of people and I made all the faux pas that anyone who's ever done any singing or expressed themselves creatively tend to make. Overconfidence, underconfidence, singing flat, all those kind of crazy things. But I remember him saying to me that I had a voice and that I should share it. And I and put in mind of the fact that all of us, if we're here and we're doing this martial arts thing or whatever it is that we're doing, we've all had sensei, we've all had influences. Some of the people that have influenced me personally across the martial arts, and when I was a kid, of course, there was Bruce Lee and all that sort of stuff. I don't regard Bruce Lee as an influence so much as a, what's the word? Definitely grew up watching his movies, loving his movies. But in terms of martial arts, there were other people. There was my Uncle Reti, who was a martial artist and really was my first teacher who started teaching me. There was a number of people over the years. And there was the people that I never met but had always wanted to emulate. There's people like, I guess, Higuana Sensei, Higuana Morio Sensei, who I remember watching him in that old BBC documentary, The Way of the Warrior, which was a brilliant, brilliant documentary available on YouTube. And then there was Teruchi Sensei, both incredible martial artists. Teruchi Sensei being Higuana Sensei's student, incredible power, flexibility, speed, kata, terrifying in kumite. And then there were people like, golly gosh, I mean Patrick McCarthy, who was one of the first people I ever saw who had this way of kind of being right across the martial arts in terms of weapon work, empty hand, kata, karate, bunkai, oyo, two-person drills, and multiple styles as well. That was a huge impact on me. I think also people like, Kanazawa sensei from Shotokan. I'd only ever really seen him on videos, and then later on as we got more advanced with YouTube and so on, I was able to see his incredible mastery of karate. I think that one of the things I always really liked was that he was this Tai Chi master as well as this karate master, and he continued training right up until, you know, he had serious ailments just prior to his death, but he continued to train and he just had beautiful technique. And I saw some interesting interviews with him and read articles in the late great Terry O'Neill, well, not late great, the magazine being the late great part of that statement, Terry O'Neill's Fighting Arts International, which is one of my favourite publications. And there were so many wonderful martial arts. Asai sensei from Shotokan. There was, of course, all the Jeet Kune Do people, Dan Asanto. There was the Gracies, Hickson Grayson, all those kind of people that I never got to train with, never met, but from afar, they were an influence. An influence in terms of, I guess, I saw something that I wanted to grasp, but didn't really know how to do that. Now, for me, how do we quantify our influences? Well, Riley Sensei and I were sitting there last week, and we were kind of talking about the importance of having a great sensei. And the reason that I call this podcast The Invisible Sensei is because I think that a lot of times the great work of great sensei is invisible, in the sense that it happens in the background. And I know that I have seen many kindnesses that have done, I guess, on the down low by many teachers, instructors, men and women who just have a heart for the martial arts and, more importantly, for the people who practice it. And I know that there are many kindnesses and many moments, small moments of, what's the word? Small moments that have made huge differences in people's lives. One of my good friends, he rang me one day, called me, and he's talked to me about, he's been training with his sensei for, must be 30 years plus. And he was training his sensei as an older gentleman now, here in New Zealand, and still training, and they were in class, and they went to do their lineup at the end of class, and he was called to stand next to his sensei in the class. Now, if you know anything about martial arts, and specifically anything about karate or any of the Japanese martial arts, then that was a real moment of acknowledgement, and it kind of was this really subtle thing. There was no kind of bouts or promotion or firecrackers. There was probably about six people in the class. But for that practitioner, for my friend, that was a real moment of kindness. And I think for me, I often think back to the people who've been kind to me over the years. The people who have supported me, the people who have encouraged me, some from afar, some from right here in New Zealand, some from other countries. And I feel very lucky. I think that what I strive to be as an instructor is, hopefully, fingers crossed, someone who can repay the kindness that was shown to me. One of my Budo brothers, we were having a discussion quite recently about teaching, and having a dojo and teaching students. And he's done that for many years, and he was looking at the option of starting something again. And he's a fantastic practitioner of karate, and he pursues kobudo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And we were talking about what we would teach. And we kind of got into this discussion where we decided that what we should teach is what we never learned. And I think that, for me, all the great martial artists that I've met, now they'll tell you the bad old days stories. Know when they used to do push-ups on one finger, balance on a razor blade, in mid-winter on an iceberg, you know, all that kind of stuff. You get where I'm going. But also, you'll find people who are trying to articulate their particular martial art in a way that makes sense, rational sense to them. I talk a lot about on this podcast the kind of sensei that you shouldn't be, or that I feel I don't want to be, or the, you know, I beg sensei, I beg teachers, these men and women who choose to do this martial art or that martial art, whatever it is. But one thing I will say is there are no manuals about how to be a good teacher. And whilst, you know, I have very judgmental opinions, I do take my hat off to anyone who takes the time and energy to teach. And, you know, there's all those sort of jokes about, you know, those that can fight and those that can't teach, which I think is a lot of bullshit, to be completely honest with you. I think that there are some wonderful people who are taking time and energy to impart the art in a way that was not imparted to them. And what I mean by that is free of the BS that sometimes accompanies the development of ego and technique and all the things that kind of go along with it. And I am certainly thankful to people like Sensei Kevin Shaw, Sensei Laurie Scott, some incredible martial artists, to my senior sensei who have been fantastic practitioners, people who I'm really lucky to be around, you know, Shihan Penny Chiketri, who is this incredible martial artist, but super disciplined, super skilled, and both she and her wife are these incredible martial artists that train with some of the best in the world, but oh my gosh, always down to learn more, always ready to put aside what they do to embrace whatever's going on. And that's the kind of sensei that I respond to. That's the kind of sensei I want to be, and that's the kind of people I want to train with. And I suppose I started off talking about someone who was a sensei to me, in a sense, but not a sensei in the martial arts sense. And the reason that I talk about Dennis, and the reason that he is so front of my mind, is that he passed away last week. And what I want to say to you on this podcast is that don't take those people, those men and women in your life that have influence on you as teachers, as sensei, as instructors, as role models, both in and outside of the dojo. Acknowledge them now, because nothing is promised. There's going to come a day when we are going to get a morning, but we're not getting an afternoon. Or we're going to get an evening that doesn't have a morning following it. So what I want to say is, if you have these teachers, if you have these people in your life that have made so much of an impact, don't wait to tell them that. A few years ago, I had a young man come up to me in an airport here in New Zealand, and I was flying somewhere, and he was obviously flying somewhere, and he came up to me and said, "You don't remember me, but you came and you taught in my dojo for a summer, and it was the best summer of my life. And I was thinking about giving up. And some of the things that you taught and the ways in which you taught it changed how I want to live my life and how I want to be and the kind of sensei that I wanted to be. And I've always looked on you as a influence. So be careful what you say and how you treat people, because having influence as an instructor and being a sensei is a double-sided coin. Treat people with kindness and respect in the way that you'd want to be treated, because if you don't, that comes back. I'm a big believer in karma. And there's a saying in Māori, anatokai, which in essence means we reap what we sow. The problem with that is that when we sow a crop that is so far away from our values and so misguided and tainted and twisted by ego and ownership and insecurity, is that no one gets to eat of the fruit of that tree. All they find is weeds and rotten fruit and twisted vines and lots of thorns. So who do you want to be? Honor your sensei. Be an honorable sensei. Do the best we can with what we've got. We don't have to be perfect. We just have to do our very best and hope that people will catch the drift. Birds flying high, know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, oh, and I'm feeling